are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beacon. I'm the host of Locked On Wolves. Happy Monday, everybody. Today we are going to start with a couple of quick Wolves updates, and then we'll dive right back into the first edition of my Timberwolves big board that we started middle of last week. First, before we get to all the content today, a quick reminder to please subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, on Stitcher, Spotify, Google, wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves. That's at Locked On T-Wolves. Don't forget the T. All right, we talked a little bit last Wednesday, I guess middle of the week, we talked about the transaction window that had been announced by the NBA. Just wanted to remind that we don't really have any additional information on that. Talked a little bit last week about the likelihood that the Wolves could use that extra roster spot to sign Jordan McLaughlin. They also could find a solution. I don't know if I mentioned this, but Omari Spellman is still on the roster, and the Wolves are a little under $500,000 into the luxury tax. They could find a way to try and waive him and save some of that money. Evan Turner could be bought out. I don't believe that if Turner were to be bought out and signed with another team, I don't think he could play in the playoffs, but he could theoretically play in the 8-game rest of the regular season, I guess, that is happening at the end of July, early August. I don't know that makes any sense, but whether it's Evan Turner, Omari Spellman, the Wolves might find a way to move on from one of them to get out of the luxury tax. They already have an open roster spot anyways, so there could be a couple of moves. It could be adding McLaughlin, and perhaps it's Keelan Martin, perhaps it's somebody else that they just want to sign and have essentially priority to sign that player in the offseason. Then if it's another veteran type player, maybe it's a young player. There's a few different ways. And of course the Wolves have one of the more progressive front offices in the league. They have, cap experts like Sasha Gupta, and they have, Rosas is extremely creative. And so it'll be interesting to see what they end up doing with that transaction window at the end of June. If and when that becomes finalized, we'll definitely talk a little bit more about it. But obviously that's the only bit of real basketball news we've had in quite a few months. So of course we're going to spend a ton of time talking about that. So that'll be fun to keep an eye on. My prediction as of right now is that they do find a way to get under the luxury tax, and that they also sign Jordan McLaughlin to a guaranteed deal. If they end up with a second roster spot, I have no idea what they're going to do with it. But we'll be fascinating to see what direction they move in. The only other real piece of Timberwolves news is that Gerson Rosas gave a non-update on Karl Anthony Towns' wrist injury. He basically said, I'll just read the quote verbatim that was written in Chris Hines' article at the Star Tribune regarding Towns' injury. Rosas says, quote, "At the right time, we'll make a formal announcement of where things are at. But to be fair, out of respect for Carl and what he's living through right now, we want to make sure and give him his space and his opportunity to work through things moving forward. Big picture, we feel positive about that situation. And when the time is right, we'll share more details on the specifics of that," end quote. Obviously, Karl Anthony Towns' mother, Jacqueline Cruz Towns, unfortunately passed away from coronavirus in April. His dad also had the virus and recovered. And of course, there's the George Floyd murder and the movement behind that. There's just been so much going on in the Twin Cities and with Towns that the Wolves have, rightly so, I think, not really said anything publicly about Towns' injury. Remember, it was a wrist fracture. It was something that had been bothering him. They shut him down in late February, and they had said he'd be out for 2 weeks. And then they said he'd be out another 2 weeks. And it was right near the end of that second 2-week time block that he was supposed to be reevaluated, that the NBA hiatus started because of the coronavirus. And so we don't know where things stand in terms of his recovery. He's been seen without, a brace a couple of times, without a splint on his wrist or whatever that, a soft cast or whatever that was. It's very likely that he's recovered without surgery based on the fact that they hadn't even shut him down for the season at the time. They were going 2 weeks at a time, even back in March when the team was obviously out of playoff contention. So it's a good sign that Rosas is saying what he said. Obviously, I don't want to speculate too much, but it would imply that there's not going to be surgery needed if Rosas is suggesting that Towns is, that he, I guess, feels positive are the exact words that Rosas used. So that's something we'll obviously keep an eye on. If the team comes back for some sort of, as we discussed last week, some sort of off-season organized team activities or you know, whether it's scrimmages or some sort of organized anything where the players would be there and have some media availability. I'm sure there would be some transparency related to Towns' injury. And so that will no doubt be addressed, you know, at some point here in the relatively near future. But the good news at this point is that Rosas feels positive. It doesn't sound like a need for surgery. I feel like that would have been reported at this point. So things seem to be trending well for Towns. There isn't any additional news as to what the Wolves will be doing. John Krasinski wrote a piece at The Athletic about the pros and cons of the Wolves not being included in the NBA's restart in Orlando. I had shameless self-promotion for Dunking with Wolves, where I am one of the co-editors, that Timberwolves blog. I'd released a piece. We talked about the pros and cons of the Wolves not being included already. I did that actually in two different articles a week or two ago. And then also just over the weekend, a piece on some of the proposed options for what the Wolves, or what the eight teams, I guess, that aren't included in the NBA's restart might do and what the pros and cons of those are, the combination of, you know, whether it be an OTA training camp style, an early training camp in the fall, some sort of tournament, some joint practices with other, those other eight teams that are being, the seven other teams that are being left out. So I ran through that list, gave the pros and cons, and then also what my prediction was going to be on what the NBA ultimately does. So go ahead and check that out if you have a minute. Next up, we are going to get into numbers 3 and 4 on my current Timberwolves big board. Last week, I started talking through my Timberwolves big board. The quick disclaimer is basically that this is the first edition of my big board, and I reserve the right to change it as we get closer to the draft. But based on a preliminary scouring of scouting reports, some film review, and where we're at this point in the offseason, of course, we thought we'd have the draft here in just about a week or so, but instead, we're looking at 4 months out. So the first couple on my big board, go back and listen to those episodes last week, or actually I did both of them in one episode to check out my reasoning for why they're 1-2 on my big board for the Wolves. But number one is Killian Hayes. Number two, Anthony Edwards. Today, I'd like to talk about number three, which might come as a little bit of a surprise. And if you listen to Friday's crossover episode with Chris Manning of Locked On Cavs and Wes Goldberg of Locked On Warriors, the three of us got together and did the first three picks of a mock draft in which the Warriors went first, Cavs second, and the Timberwolves third. And their selections went Anthony Edwards 1 to the Warriors, LaMelo Ball number 2 to the Cavaliers. And then my selection number 3 also happens to be the third player on my big board. And that is Obi Toppin. Obi Toppin is a power forward out of the University of Dayton and kind of burst onto the scene, especially this year, was arguably the most dominant offensive player in all of college basketball. And might come as a surprise that he's number 3 on my big board. A lot of mock drafts have him going towards the middle of the lottery, kind of the back few picks of the top 10. And there are certainly some limitations we'll get to in a second, but I think the Timberwolves are in a decent spot in terms of their wings, especially if they end up re-signing Malik Beasley in restricted free agency. And so I think you can make a really good argument for Toppin being the selection for the Wolves, depending on where they pick there in the middle, likely in somewhere in the 3 to 5 range in the first round. So the profile on Toppin, and I'm going to try and avoid repeating too much of what I said in the crossover episode on Friday, but there's a couple things I didn't get the chance to get to in what was a little bit of a shortened segment. But I guess the rundown quickly on Toppin is that he's a fantastic offensive player. He's awesome in the pick and roll, which obviously the Wolves do a lot of, and D'Angelo Russell is also awesome in the pick and roll. So is Karl-Anthony Towns. Toppin's really good at scoring in the paint. He's athletic and big enough to catch the ball on the roll and score in the paint. He's also a good passer, so he can pass out of the roll. He can pass from the perimeter. He can also handle the ball. There's a lot of those. In that sense, there's some similarities to Towns in that he can play on the perimeter. He can play as the roll man. He's very good in transition. He plays hard all the time, which is huge. And it's something that, you know, Towns does. And then he has these lapses where, you know, he plays super, super hard on offense. And then he either, you know, gets worked up about a call on that side of the floor and doesn't hustle back on defense, or has a couple of possessions where he clearly is a little bit out of it on defense, or he just gets mad and plays even harder and gets out of position defensively because he's playing so hard. Toppin could have, I guess, some of those same characteristics, but he plays hard pretty much all the time. He's awesome in transition, super powerful, athletic, fast. And again, a huge part of playing in transition is a combination of playing hard and being athletic. Wiggins didn't always play hard. He was always athletic. A guy like Toppin can do both. The biggest problem with Toppin is defensively. And stop me if you've heard this before, but this would add to the Wolves' core. As I said on Friday, they're you know, by default, if you're picking a guy third overall, he becomes part of your core, whether you like it or not. And you better like it if you're taking him third. Towns, Russell, if Beasley's re-signed top, and they're all below average defensive players. Towns has the tools to be average or better, and he's shown glimpses of being able to do that. Beasley, you know, it's still pretty early in his career. He's just a little bit undersized, and he might be able to be hidden a little bit on the wing if he's playing with a couple of other bigger wings. And Russell has shown stretches where he can be decent. I mean, he's strong enough. He's big enough. The problem is he's not great athletically, and he doesn't always compete defensively, which I guess is very similar to Towns' issues. Toppin's similar in that his awareness isn't great. Towns and Russell both seem to have pretty good awareness on both ends of the court. Although Towns occasionally will be a half step slow on rotations defensively. Toppin's awareness is also not great, but he can recover athletically. That's something that Russell doesn't have. Towns has it to some extent, but Toppin is such a good athlete and he's long enough, he's big enough and also young enough. There's some hope that he can improve on that end of the floor, but there's concerns with what he did as a college player. That's really the only downside for him is defensively. Offensively, he pretty much does everything. He doesn't play a lot in the post, but the Wolves aren't going to ask him to do that. I mean, Towns was only getting a couple post touches a game last season, so I wouldn't expect Toppin to ever see time in the post offensively. The most recent comp for him that I like is Brandon Clark from last year's draft, who a lot of people thought could fit what the Wolves wanted to do. The analytics models all liked him because he was an athletic, strong rebounder. The biggest downside is he wasn't a good shooter. And so that's the big difference. That's why Toppin's a much better prospect. One of the reasons, both are older prospects, which is also a little bit of a concern, I guess, as you're drafting a guy who's already 22. And so that was also a thing with Clark. The Wolves passed on Clark. He ended up going to the Grizzlies later in the first round and had a great rookie year. He's always going to be a little bit limited, because of his shooting and basically he's going to be he's going to catch lobs. He's going to be a good rebounder. He could be a good defender. But in terms of being able to pass as a big man and finish at the rim, there's a lot of similarities there. Toppin's a better shooter. He's not quite as good of a rebounder as Clark. I would have liked to see his rebounding numbers better at a school like Dayton, playing a lot of competition that he dominated on offense, but didn't necessarily thoroughly dominate on the glass. And so that would be a slight concern that I have. There are some negative, and I mentioned this on the, you know, when I talked to Wes on Friday in that episode of our crossover, the mock draft, but there are some comparisons to Derek Williams. I'll pause and let all Timberwolves fans kind of shudder at that thought, but that's kind of the negative comp. I don't buy into that as much. If you look at their rate-based stats from, you know, their final year at their respective universities, Derek Williams at the University of Arizona, Toppin's a significantly better passer. His block and steal rates are also better. Rebounding, again, is the one thing that Williams was better at than Toppin. So that's, again, a little worrisome for me. There's also some Amari Stoudemire comparisons. I think that's largely due to the athleticism, the ability in the open court to just dominate and transition and also, you know, play a little bit of a face-up game. And again, get to the rim, dominate in the pick and roll, rolling to the rim. So, you know, I'm not saying he's going to be Amari Stoudemire. I also think he's a better prospect than Derek Williams because he does many more things. And the shooting has been more of a progression. Derek Williams suddenly had this crazy, like, shot like 50% from three in his last year at Arizona. And Toppin's always been a good offensive player. So I think for me, I don't have the Derek Williams concerns. I think he's more Brandon Clark with a jumper, which is good. And that's the type of player who could start next to Towns. The main concern that I already mentioned is defense. And you consider that fit on the Wolves. If you have four of your five starters as below average defenders, even if you're a fifth starter, I mean, Josh Okogie is an above average defender, but he's not, you know, he's not Robert Covington. He's not prime Andre Iguodala. He's not a lockdown perimeter defender necessarily, but he's very good. Can you have a passable NBA defense with four below average starters and one slightly above average defender? I should say below average defenders, not starters. I don't know. I don't think so. And so that would be, you know, obviously a concern. If you bring back Beasley and draft Toppin, you better have a guy who can rotate in defensively at the four and do a good job. I mean, James Johnson is again, he's an above average defender. He can defend probably three positions pretty well. And he's switchable. I mean, he can guard twos and ones on a switch okay, similar to Towns. And so perhaps Toppin comes off the bench and Johnson starts for the first part of the year and they rotate in Toppin as the year goes along if they feel like he can handle things defensively. But think about how good this team would be offensively. Four of the five starters would be above average three-point shooters. And we know that at least Towns and probably Beasley can sniff the 40% three-point shooting mark. Russell's going to be above average. Toppin will surely be average or above as a rookie. Okogie obviously is a weak link there, but if they can stick him in the corners on offense and think about that offense with all those guys can score in transition with their combination of athleticism, their court vision, the offense would be basically unstoppable. It really would be. And the again, defensively, they're going to have to bring it up a half notch. I mean, you've got to be something close to a middle of the pack defense. If you're the league's, if you're a top five offense in the league, you've got to be something close to a middle of the pack defensive team. You know, if they're the 20th best defensive team in the league, they probably have a shot at the playoffs if the offense is top five. I would think that that's fair. But to really make noise, that defense is going to have to improve to at least league average. And I mentioned this when I talked to Wes on Friday, but you know, you look at some of the other teams. Rosas was in the front office with Houston, and they focused exclusively on offense and pretty much always, but they were a bad defensive team and were still making the playoffs. And then recent years, they became better defensively and were a legitimate title contender. Although obviously things haven't really worked out for them at all in the playoffs, but that's one example of how you build a team. And if Towns and Russell are in some way, some combination, basically the James Harden of Minnesota, then the Wolves are working on plugging in those pieces around them. And if, you know, I think Toppin can be such a good fit offensively that you worry a lot less about the defense and find defense in other places. So that's why I put Toppin at number three on my big board. Next up, I want to get to number four on the big board. Before we do that, I did want to mention an initiative that we are all getting behind here at the Locked On Podcast Network. The Locked On Podcast Network stands against racism and social injustice. That's why we, the hosts, are making personal donations to local and national organizations that are fighting for change. And in the month of June, Locked On is matching the total of all host donations up to an additional $10,000. To make your own donation along with us, please visit lockedonpodcast.com/Black Lives Matter. Before we get to the resumption of my current Timberwolves big board, I wanted to talk a little bit about Blinkist. Let me tell you about my secret weapon for learning new things and getting ahead. It's hard to find the time to sit down to read and learn more. When you don't have free time, you can't read or work on personal development. There's an incredible app that solves this problem, and I highly recommend it. It's called Blinkist. Blinkist is really unique, and it works on your phone, your tablet, or your web browser. Blinkist takes the best key takeaways, the need-to-know information from thousands of nonfiction books, and condenses them down into just 15 minutes that you can read or listen to. Successful people like business leaders are well known for reading a lot of books. Blinkist is made for busy people like you who want to get the main points of a book quickly so you can start using that information right away. And with its audio feature, Blinkist makes it easy to finish a book during your commute, on your lunch break, or while you exercise. 12 million people are using Blinkist right now, and it has a massive and growing library from self-help, business, health to history books. Blinkist has the latest titles from bestsellers lists, as well as the classic nonfiction titles you always meant to read but never had time to. The best time to use Blinkist is while driving in the car, while working out, while traveling, even really if you're just making breakfast or lunch or dinner for your family, 15-minute, really bite-sized amounts of time to read fantastic books like Becoming by Michelle Obama, The 4-Hour Workweek by Tim Ferriss, Secrets of Power Negotiating by Roger Dawson, tons of fantastic business and nonfiction books that will get you prepared for the next step in your career, your hobbies, whatever you're looking to do next. It's the perfect way to get as much information as you need quickly. With Blinkist, you get unlimited access to read or listen to a massive library of condensed nonfiction books, all the books you want and all for one low price. Right now, for limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/NBA, try it free for 7 days, and save 25% off your new subscription. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/NBA. That's Blinkist.com/NBA to start your free 7-day trial, and you'll also save 25% off, but only when you sign up at Blinkist.com/NBA. And while we're at it, let's talk about our great friends at RockAuto.com. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it is now impossible to stock all the parts you need in a traditional chain storefront. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning and wait while the person at the counter orders the parts on their computer, choosing the only brand their warehouse happens to carry? You have computers with access to RockAuto.com at home and in your pocket. One reason to repair and maintain your cars is to save money that you can then use for other important things like the mortgage or food. Why would you choose to spend 30, 50, or 100% more for the exact same auto parts at a chain store or new car dealership? Chain stores have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers. RockAuto.com's prices are the same for everybody and are reliably low. RockAuto.com always offers the lowest prices possible rather than changing prices based on the market and what the market will bear, like airlines do. RockAuto.com is for everybody and does not require membership or an account login. It's a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to rockauto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. The rockauto.com catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brands, specifications, and prices you prefer. Best of all, the prices at rockauto.com are always reliably low and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers alike. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write "Locked On" in their "How did you hear about us" box so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com. All right, let's talk about number four on my current big board. Number one was Killian Hayes. Number two, Anthony Edwards. Number three, Obi Toppin. Number four is Tyrese Halliburton. He's a guard out of Iowa State, and he in some places might be listed as a point guard. He definitely played, ran the offense a lot in college, and in terms of his skill set, seems like he would be more of a pure point guard, but the combination of his size and his shooting ability would allow him to play off the ball, which, you know, similar things can be said about D'Angelo Russell. We already talked about Killian Hayes the other day. He was number one on my big board as being very, very similar to D'Angelo Russell. There are some similarities here with Halliburton as well, but there's a couple of differences. We'll get into that here in a minute. But as mentioned, he functions more as a point guard. He's got really great court vision. He is a playmaker. He can get into the paint a little bit, although, well, we'll get to his negatives here in a minute, but he's got a pretty good first step. He has enough size and shooting ability that he could play both guard spots. He's a solid defender. He's not great as a one-on-one defensive player. He's probably a little better than Killian Hayes one-on-one, and they're both decent help defenders. Halliburton has does a good job rotating on defense. He clearly has the smarts to play within a defense and understands the schemes, which is huge. It's something that Russell has some lapses with, but also, you know, they both have some of those same athletic limitations. And so there's a question of, could they play next to each other, I guess, but offensively, again, would fit really well. Halliburton is a better shooter than Killian Hayes. We talked about how Killian Hayes is a good off the dribble shooter, but struggled in the catch and shoot game, at least last year playing overseas. And Halliburton is just across the board a good shooter. He played two seasons at Iowa State, and as last year of college, he shot just under 42%, 41.9% from three. As a freshman, he shot 43.4%. So for his career, 42.6% from three in college on 237 attempts. So he was launching as a sophomore last year, 5.5 threes a game. As a freshman, still over 3 threes a game. So, I mean, he was shooting, you look at his college career, two seasons combined, 4.2 threes a game at 42.6%. So that's a significant sample size. He shot 82% on free throws last year after shooting only 69% his first year. So clearly there was some improvement there. He obviously made a big leap from year one to year two in terms of scoring average. He went from 7 points a game to 15.2 points per game. But as he added more shots, more shot attempts to his game, as his usage rate increased, his efficiency generally just improved. You look at his effective field goal percentage, it was slightly down from first year to second, again, because of an increase in usage, but he still shot over 50% from the field and was a 42% three-point shooter, 82% free throw shooter, rebounded enough and passed enough within the Iowa State as part of Iowa State's team to cement himself as a top pick in this draft. As mentioned, the only real concerns are the one-on-one defense and then also his ability to finish in the paint, to finish at the rim. He is still a relatively slight player. He's 6'5 with a 6'8 wingspan, but he's only 175 pounds and lacks a little bit of strength in the paint, shoots a lot of floaters and contorts his body to shoot tough layups instead of absorbing contact, finishing through contact. Hopefully with a pro conditioning, strength and conditioning staff, he puts on a little bit of muscle and doesn't entirely shy away from contact. He's not ultra athletic, and so he can't necessarily do that and still be successful in the paint. And he's a good free throw shooter. And so, you know, he only averaged 2 free throws a game last year. I mean, he shot 11 shots a game and only got to the line twice a game, shot 82% when he got there. But he needs to be able to absorb some contact and score in the paint in the NBA, which would be probably my main concern. Again, defensively, if he's a good enough rotational defender, if he can fill passing lanes, if he can use his length and, you know, play alongside a Josh Okogie and help cover for a D'Angelo Russell, then I think he can be okay. The Wolves are always going to put Okogie or even Jarrett Culver on, you know, guarding the best individual player on the other team. And so it's unlikely Halliburton would ever be in a position where he's guarding the James Hardens or the, you know, the LeBron James of the world. The Wolves are going to find a way to get Okogie or maybe a bigger wing, a James Johnson or somebody on those guys before a guy like Halliburton. So as long as he can play within the defensive scheme, he could be a really solid prospect for this team. Looking at his fit with the Wolves, he could play alongside D'Angelo Russell. Obviously, the Wolves would like to keep Malik Beasley in, so Beasley would be the starting two. Okogie probably starts at the three, so Halliburton could be a combo guard off the bench. If the Wolves do retain Jordan McLaughlin, who was on a two-way deal, and we mentioned don't know what's going to happen at the end of June during the transaction window, if he comes back on a partially guaranteed deal, a multi-year deal, or what happens exactly. But if they bring McLaughlin back, Halliburton's probably your backup at the two, and Culver is the other backup on the wing. But he could also play some one too, depending on what happens with Jordan McLaughlin, depending on, you know, obviously injuries and season and all that stuff. He'd have the ability to play the one. And so I don't think we should forget that either. But you look at that rotation, D'Angelo Russell, Malik Beasley are probably your starters in the backcourt. Some combination of Jarrett Culver and Josh Okogie are playing on the wing alongside Beasley. McLaughlin's your primary backup one, and then Halliburton can also back up at the one and the two. And that gives you six guys that you feel pretty good about. The ceiling on, you know, who knows what Jordan McLaughlin's ceiling is, but they only need him to be a solid backup point guard. The ceiling on Josh Okogie is probably still solid starter. I mean, he's only 2 years in the league. It's easy to forget that because he's the only guy that's been around for that long with Karl-Anthony Towns. He's only 2 years in the league and he played 2 years at Georgia Tech. So there's still some growth to be had there. If he could become a league average 3-point shooter, he's absolutely a starter on a playoff team. You know, he could be your fifth option on offense, hit an open three and be a lockdown defender, play in transition. You've got a pretty good wing rotation. If you can add Halliburton to those five that I just mentioned, Russell, Beasley, Culver, Okogie, McLaughlin. And, you know, then you fill out your bench with a couple other guys who can guard multiple positions. If the Wolves have talked about playing a point guard with three wings and Towns, so you're looking at Russell, Towns, and some combination of those six as your other, or I guess five of those six, as your three wings. James Johnson can guard a couple different positions. Gives the Wolves a lot of roster flexibility. The one guy on the roster, and this is getting a little bit in the weeds on maybe a different conversation, who doesn't fit in this conversation of switchability as much as Juancho Hernan Gomez, who's also a restricted free agent, but he provides a little bit of rebound and defense that some of the rest of those guys don't. And while Hernan Gomez isn't nearly as switchable, he's a solid one-on-one defender and decent in the pick and roll at the four. And so the question is, do the Wolves, you know, depending on what they do in the draft, what does that make them do with Hernan Gomez? Do they let him walk? Do they match an offer for him in restricted free agency? But signing Halliburton, this gives you six guys that essentially can help fill in at you know, three and a half positions there. That's not including Jake Lehman, who's primarily going to play the four, but also can play the three and is more switchable than a guy like Hernan Gomez. There's also Keelan Martin, who could always be brought back in an end of the bench type role and could fill in as well. But Halliburton, being only 20 years old, playing 2 years in college, has quite a bit of upside. Can step in right away and be a shooter on the perimeter that the Wolves desperately need. Of course, both Culver and Okogie in that group we just talked about are below average 3-point shooters. And to add another guy who can shoot at a better rate than really all of those guys, except for probably Beasley and maybe D'Angelo Russell. I mean, it's almost a no-brainer if Halliburton's on the board and some of these other guys we've talked about are gone. He could be a pretty seamless fit into what the Wolves are trying to do. All right, that's all we have for you today here at Locked On Wolves. Thanks once again for listening to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Remember, the Locked On Network is your local experts on the biggest stories. Subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, on Stitcher, Spotify, Google, wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves. That's at Locked On T-Wolves. Don't forget the T. That wraps up this edition of Locked On Wolves. Now tell your smart device to play the most recent episode of Rejecting the Screen. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.